So now that I'm recording, I'll tell you where I am. So we just moved into this new building, and in this very room is where Dr. Dre recorded Chronic.
Oh, you're kidding.
Nuh-uh.
Howdy, friends. This is episode 15 of the All Terrain Podcast. This is going to be the final episode in season one of the show. We're going to go out in style with Kevin and Sarah McHouston from Lifestyle Overland. These two, along with their four-year-old daughter, have been documenting their backcountry travels around the Southwest for the past few years on a YouTube channel, Lifestyle Overland. Sarah and Kevin, thanks for joining us.
Yeah,
glad to be here.
So, guys, I got to tell you, I love your videos. You're one of the few overlanding channels on YouTube that does rad stuff with kids.
Yeah,
thanks.
Which is uncommon. You had one of your videos where you're going up some gnarly trail and the wheel of the 4Runner's coming up off the ground and things are getting kind of hectic. And I've seen plenty of overlanding videos of, you know, just dudes and dinks running around out there afraid to do that stuff. So we're all about the kids. You know, we've got two little guys and we go all over the place with them. So
awesome.
I think
awesome.
It's rad.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
So you guys started off in Tennessee, moved to New Mexico. Now you're in Arizona. What brought you guys out west?
So originally we moved out west for work. My background's in project management and on various construction projects. And so we moved to New Mexico about 7 years ago for a particular project, and it's been about 7 years there. And then recently had the opportunity to go to work for Turtleback Trailers. And so we've been with Turtleback Trailers about 7 or 8 months. And that kind of all came about from buying a trailer 2 years ago and being in love with it. And so when the opportunity came up, we jumped all over to be a part of the Overland community from a different perspective.
Yeah.
So it's been an interesting transition.
How do you like Arizona?
Oh, it's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
It's there are so much to see and do within just a stone's throw of Phoenix. So
yeah.
we're eating it up.
It's cool. Hot though.
Yeah.
But it's great right now.
But it's a dry heat.
Right? Yeah. Well,
you know, that's what we heard. But, you know, when we got here, they're like, oh, yeah, it's a dry heat except for the monsoon season.
I'm like, we're like, oh, okay.
What's the monsoon season? They're like, oh, you'll see. Like, nobody really wanted to tell us.
No.
You know, it's like because they figured we might leave.
Right.
And then the monsoons hit, and it was like, you know, 115 degrees and 70% humidity. And I was like, oh, take me back to Tennessee.
Yes.
Yeah. We spent a week at my father-in-law's in Knoxville in July. And it was boiling out there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's pretty rough too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We try to only visit during nice weather.
Yeah.
So if we can avoid summer in East Tennessee, we do.
Yeah. Yeah. So you just describe yourselves on your website as full-time RVers, and I don't know if you posted much about it on your videos, although your Christmas tree video had a little bit What do you mean full-time RVers? How's that work?
So what's it been now about?
It'll be 3 years in March.
3 years in March that we've been living in a fifth wheel camper full-time. We sold our house and downsized all our possessions just so we could be more mobile and have more funds, you know, to travel. And it's been an interesting lifestyle, to say the least.
Well, yeah. We originally thought we were only going to do it for like 6 months. And so I was like, oh, well, I can do anything for 6 months. That's not too bad.
Right.
6 months has turned into 3 years. So, you know.
Nice. So you guys are like, you're like Riggs from Lethal Weapon, right?
Yeah. Pretty much.
I'm too old for this shit.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you guys, I'm sort of picturing, I'm envisioning like you've got some awesome piece of land that you can park that thing on and just sort of look out over the mesas.
No. So, we wish.
So we were fortunate in Mexico. We had some friends that had a ranch. And so we had a sweet little spot there. But then when we moved to Phoenix, RV parks are plentiful, but unfortunately you have to be 55 or older to be in 95% of them. So we were fortunate enough to find one that really suited our needs and was family friendly and, and dog friendly and all that good stuff. So it's a really cool community. I mean, we love the Overland community, and there's a lot of parallels that you see in the RVing community as well. There's definitely a sense of camaraderie and people watching each other's back and help them take care of their rigs and stuff like that. So it's been an interesting lifestyle, to say the least.
Cool. Yeah.
Awesome. It sounds like, you know, it's, I mean, honestly, I've thought of doing that, just like sell it all and spend more time and energy on other things. I think I would still need a really big garage though.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's something that I think we all really miss, just because all of Kevin's things bleed into the house or the camper, and
for sure
a garage would be nice.
Yeah.
My office mate, I share an office with a guy upstairs, and he's, you know, he's married, but they don't have any kids, and they live in this, you know, cool urban apartment, hipster apartment downtown Reno. And he's always talking about how, oh, you don't need that much. You don't need that much. I'm like, well, I could totally live in a, you know, a 2-room apartment, but I still would need a 4-car garage.
Yeah.
For stuff.
Right. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I only have 4 bikes, but I don't know what I would do with them in a place like that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move into the questions. So for this season, and I'm saying season because that's kind of a popular thing to do with podcasts as well as Overland videos.
Oh yeah. We should probably start doing that too, I guess.
I'm only doing it for the podcast because I want to stop for a little while and kind of change the format. But anyway, season.
Gotcha.
So
gotcha.
For this season, we're pretty much doing the standard set of questions about overlanding, camping, and life on the dirt roads. These are kind of the standard questions that you would see in forums with endless debate about the best way to do things. Mm-hmm. So I find it's better to just sort of dig into one person's way of doing things and learn about that and then move on to somebody else.
Sure.
Without arguing about all the stuff that happens in forums, you know?
Right.
So we've
talked
to single dudes, overlanding in a regular cab truck. We talked to a family of 5 and a 3rd-gen 4Runner, all of them in the 4Runner.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Our last podcast was my friend Kirsten, who goes bike packing, just himself on a bicycle. All his gear.
Wow.
So we've learned a lot, and I'm really excited to hear about how your setup works for your family. You guys ready to go?
Yeah, hey. Absolutely.
So family or friends, who's in your overlanding crew?
So it's myself, Sarah, Caroline, our 4-year-old, and our black lab, Zeke. We're kind of loners. I think we really use the overlanding as an opportunity to recharge, unplug, and kind of catch up as a family. But we're starting to travel more and more with groups. We just went on a 3-day adventure with Overland Bound, Michael and Corey. They're awesome people, salt of the earth. We just went on a trip. Actually, we just got back Thursday from a trip with Jason Kirchy with Swell Runner.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you find those kindred spirits to go on the trail with you and things are just low stress and everybody's just kind of meshing really well, those are really, really fun trips that make you want to go with more people. And then every now and then you go with someone where you kind of think, well, let's just go back to being a hermits again.
Right.
So there's definitely a balance, you know.
Right.
You know, we really have a passion for teaching and bringing more and more people into this pastime, and so we're going to make an effort, especially now that we're in Phoenix and there's a really tight-knit overland community here we want to be a part of. So we're looking forward to getting plugged in and helping more and more people get out there and learn more tips and techniques and things like that.
Cool. Yeah, we're pretty loners as well. Some of the big groups can get kind of intense.
Yeah.
Yes.
You guys just did the Death Valley trip with a pretty big group.
Yeah, that was
that a while ago?
Yeah, we're really behind on our video editing.
Okay.
We've been really busy. We went with a herd of turtles, which is just kind of a sub community that we have with turtle bike trailer owners and some of their friends and stuff.
Right.
And so we did Mojave Road last year, and then we did Death Valley, and that's what we're working on our YouTube channel right now. We've got two more videos to release on that, and great group of people. I mean, just really have an awesome time doing that. We're actually leaving this Thursday to head back to Mojave Road, and we've got about, so we've doubled in size. We've got about 12 or 13 rigs and trailers going with us on that trip. So, cool. So it's really, really fun time.
Sweet. It'd be a good time to be there.
Yeah.
Your Mojave, I just watched your Mojave, or not Mojave, your Death Valley video today. You went from Ubihibe down to racetrack to Lippincott, which doing the big trailers on Lippincott, well, big trailers, trailers on Lippincott. Seems kind of hectic, but where did you guys go from there? Did you go over to Eureka from there? Saline?
Yeah, so the next day we went up and went over. We actually disconnected. We decided to base camp there at Saline Springs for a couple of days. So we base camped and took off to Eureka, and then came back across Steel Pass.
Yeah,
just in the rigs, and then that comes right back around to Saline Valley, and that was kind of the next day. Actually, we ran all the way out to, was it Big Bear, for gas, and then Eureka.
Big Pine.
Yeah. There you go.
Big Bear.
there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of names out there. It's a lot to remember. It's been a while.
Yeah, we did that same trip a couple years ago from Lippincott to Saline, Steel Pass to Eureka and everything. That's it's a good trip. It's a good fun trip.
It really is.
Cool. So what is your overlanding vehicle?
So we primarily use our 2014 Toyota 4Runner Trail Edition. We've been modding it as needed and as necessary, and some of it not so much as necessary as just wanted.
Right.
I thoroughly justify it to the wife first, though, so everything on there was needed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm such a pushover anyway that, like, if he has a good enough presentation, then I'm like, yeah, that makes perfect sense. We do need to do that.
Right. That's why we make sure and hit as many rocks as we can, so, you know, we can upgrade things.
Do the words ever come out of your mouth like, hey, this will play really well on Instagram?
You know,
I don't know if he said it out loud, but I'm sure he's probably thought it.
I don't think that's ever really been the goal necessarily, but yeah, it works out. It does.
Yep. So the 4Runner, you've got Trail Edition. So what kind of upgrades have you put on that have really been sort of meaningful for you on the trail?
So the first thing that we did was upgrade the tires. So we went to the BFG KOs, and then subsequently to the KO2s, and now we're running a 285/70R17. We run the same matching wheel and tires on our trailer as well, just so we have 8 wheels and tires that all match all the way across the rig. And then we also have, we started with the Icon Stage 2, running the 2.0 shocks front and rear. That worked for a while until we started adding other mods. And so recently we went to 2.5 remote reservoirs in the rear with the adjusters. And Old Man Emu 2899, the super heavy springs, because we're running, running 800 or 1,000 extra pounds on there now with the Southern Style Off-Road front and rear bumpers.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And then we have the Smittybilt X2O 10,000 pound winch. And then moving up from there, we have the Budbilt sliders, Stealth Custom Series wheels. And we got the ARB fridge rock and rolling inside. Gobi rack on top with some. We have a budget LED light setup. We didn't go crazy on the lights yet. We're still kind of researching that. We just couldn't justify spending $1,000 on the light bar. So
yeah, lights are expensive.
Yeah. So, what else have we done to it? So wheels, tires. Oh yeah, we did the snorkel. That was something we did right before the Enchanted Rockies Trail because we knew there was potential for having a lot of water crossings.
Yeah.
Which primarily we wanted to get cool air to the engine because, you know, when you're running 10 miles an hour down a trail, every bit of cool air that you can get in the intake is going to help it out.
Have you noticed the practical improvement with that?
Honestly, we really haven't. It's really insurance at this point.
Right.
Because number one, I don't want to get so deep in the water that I'm going to be shorting out electronics, which are, you know, still susceptible to shorting out and things like that. It's just an insurance package. So if I did accidentally drop into a hole that I didn't see or something like that, it'd give me a little bit to recover and get out without flooding the engine. So that's really the primary purpose of the snorkel.
Right. Okay. So your vehicle, so you're also towing the Turtleback trailer with that.
Right.
So that let's talk about that as part of your vehicle for now. Okay. So that's just give me like the basic stats on what that is.
Okay, so the Turtleback that you've been seeing in the videos is our 2016. We actually just sold that here about 4 months ago and built a new 2018. It just hit the trail on Monday, actually. And so that trailer has a 42-gallon water tank, 6-gallon water heater. It's got the brand new composite kitchen in it. So there's no wood. It's all a high-density polyethylene material. It's got a partner steel stove, runs dual 10,000 BTU burners in it. It carries 11 pounds of propane on the primary side and another 5 pounds on the secondary side. Tons and tons and tons of storage. Ours has got dual group 31 batteries with a 2000 watt pure sine wave inverter, so we can charge our laptop and our camera batteries and all that good stuff without worrying about damaging the sensitive electronics in those. It's got a ZAMP 15 amp solar charger, so you can plug in any solar panel that you like. And we're running a 23.0. Right now we have the Byron rooftop tent on there. We'll eventually be upgrading that to the Sydney. There's a whole new design that's going to be coming to the States pretty soon, so we're excited about that. We're also fortunate enough to be plugged in with Darche USA, so we're actually running their prototype 270 degree awning, wraparound awning. And can't be more excited about it. It's an incredible piece of engineering. So
it's like one of those ones that sort of folds all the way around the
we'll have some videos coming out on that here before too long, but really cool piece of equipment. What else?
What does the trailer weigh? Like,
so the trailer itself dry weighs in at about 1900 pounds and then fully loaded with, a total of 48 gallons of water between the water heater and the water tank. And all our gear, we're coming in at around 2400, 2500 pounds.
That's not bad.
No. Mm-mm.
What,
no.
What's the kind of suspension is it on?
So it's right now it's riding on a rubber torsion axle. It's a 3,500 pound independent axle.
Right.
But we're almost ready to release a new suspension that we've been developing with Icon. So we're really excited about what's coming out. We looked really hard at doing an air suspension on it, but there's just so many moving parts and potential failure points that we moved to away from that. I went to a coil spring.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, our motto is, you know, keep it simple and keep it serviceable.
Right.
And so going to a more basic coil spring with remote reservoir Icon shocks, I think is going to be a killer combination. So we're excited to get that.
Having shocks on a trailer is probably going to be really nice.
Oh, yeah.
You'll avoid a lot of the bouncing.
Exactly. And it's a tough thing to stabilize because, you know, with a vehicle, you can really create a lot of travel, but with a trailer, you don't really want too much travel or it's going to just flop right on over. Mm-hmm. So there's a fine balance and there's a lot of science that goes behind the dampening that has to go into play there.
I've seen several pictures. I don't know if it's been the Turtleback trailers, but I know that the Patriot brand from Australia, mm-hmm. he's posted some pictures of his trailers lying over on their sides in the middle of the roads.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that was like extreme testing or what, but towing a trailer is not a trivial matter.
It's not. But you know what? I've really enjoyed the challenge because, you know, we're not rock crawlers. Right. You know, we're traveling more for the enjoyment and the scenery. And so when we do find some technical spots on the trail, it's almost like an extra challenge to get that third axle through it. You know, I told Michael with Overland Bound, it's kind of like, you know, you feel like the settlers from, you know, back in the in the old days, traveling across the prairie in their wagons and stuff. And it's like, well, how much stuff can we take with us to the most remote location possible? Yeah. And we've surprised some people. You know, we've come up on like Goose Lake in northern New Mexico. We took a trailer up there, and everybody was like in their razors and stuff. And they're like, "You brought a trailer up here?" We're like, well, yeah. I'm gonna go take a shower.
Yeah, that's nice. And are you running do those trailers come with a regular ball hitch or one of the swivel hitches?
We run the max coupler.
Max coupler. Okay.
Yeah. The max coupler is the only way to go. I mean, it's not only is it make it, it not only does it make it more safe, it makes it a lot more quiet too, because with the, a locking hitch pin, the bolt style that goes into your receiver, and the way we've designed the tongue on the Turtleback, you can actually cinch both ends down and you get zero rattle in the connection point. So nice. It's really nice.
Cool. I'm pumping you for extra information on trailers, 'cause I'm got a trailer project of my own that I'm working on right now.
Okay. Gotcha.
So hopefully you guys will see some pictures of that coming out. Hopefully it might be done as early as next week. I got to having a professional welder weld the new springs on it.
Nice.
I could do it myself, but I'm not a professional welder. I don't know if you ever used a welder, but it's really easy to make sparks and melt metal.
That's very
but
true.
But not easy to do like real construction work with a welder.
That's so very true.
That's what I'm doing.
Okay.
So you've touched on.
If you have any questions, feel free to let us know. We'll be glad to help.
Oh yeah, I will. So we touched a little bit on this next question, but how are you guys carrying your gear for these trips?
Well, obviously most of it rides in the Turtleback.
Yeah.
You know,
we've got like storage room for bags and chairs and all that stuff in there.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think the only thing that we travel with outside the Turtleback right now is the ARB, my drone, the camera gear,
and your recovery box
and my recovery gear. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's about it.
That's in like in the 4Runner. In the truck.
4Runner. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're very low tech in the 4Runner right now. We have Rubbermaid storage pins for that kind of stuff, but we've got big plans for that too.
And you run the fridge in the trailer or in the truck?
Always run it in the vehicle. And there's we have a lot of people coming to us, you know, saying, well, why can't we put our fridge in the trailer? Well, you can, but the problem is, if you base camp, you're leaving all your food and drinks behind.
Mm-hmm.
And a trailer is a box, so if you have any kind of heat, ambient heat, that fridge is only going to heat up that box even more and make it less and less efficient. Eventually,
right?
You know, stress the fridge beyond what it really should be.
Right.
Objected to. So we encourage people to run it in their vehicles.
Yeah. That's going to be my plan with my project. I'm going to leave the fridge and the camp chairs in the 4Runner, my 4Runner.
Yeah.
Because day trips, you know?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Well, and the nice thing with the trailer is that we also, keep like have specific camping clothes box so that we're not packing everything every single time we want to go camping. So we literally just have like clothes in the trailer already. So all we have to do is just throw some socks and underwear in and go by the grocery store and get food. And then we're on the trail. Yeah. So to keep it simpler.
And that's if you want to change underwear.
Yeah. You don't have to.
No.
You don't have to.
If you want to go camping with me, you do.
Yeah, having everything ready to go is super awesome, provided you remember to wash the dishes before you put it away, which isn't a guarantee. But
that's true. That's
fire will kill it.
For me, it is. Because that's my domain. The kitchen
good.
Is my domain. He can do everything else, but that's mine.
Do you, I know before you guys got the trailer, you were running a lot of gear on top of the 4Runner, but not so much anymore, I wouldn't think.
No.
I think every now and then we might throw a large table up there.
Or a grill.
Or a grill, but now with the new setup, the new trailer has two flip down stainless tables, and with that partner stove, they've got this really cool anodized aluminum griddle that fits on there, and we cook our steaks and our hamburgers and all that on there. And it's like a restaurant. I mean, it really gives it this great sear. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, we really minimized to the point that, you know, the rig doesn't have a lot of stuff in it.
So tell me about, you know, like performance with, you know, fully loaded 4Runner versus with the Turtleback. Are you like highway? How does it feel on the highway, or how does it feel like on the trail? Because, you know, you don't have all that weight up top anymore.
Oh, that's a world of difference. I mean, the stability level is significant. We ran a rooftop tent on the 4Runner here not long ago just to do some photo shoots. And I was really amazed at how different the 4Runner felt, especially trying to weave in and out of traffic. I took a turn a little too quick, and it, you know, the left front tire was like, boop, 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 boop. I was like, okay. I kind of like having everything, you know, low or on top of another axle back there. So it does make a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Trailering is, I mean, it's a trade off because you've got that thing back there and backing up and U-turning. Well, not U-turning, but backing up and sort of like threading through parking lots is a challenge, but it's a trade-off.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys have a 23, what is it? I keep thinking 23 and me, but that's not 20. It.
23-0.
So 23-0, it's a big one too, right?
Yeah, so in the videos you see what we're running is the Sydney, and it's actually a dual ladder. It's larger than a king-size bed. Mm-hmm. So, it's a massive tent. There's a picture out there that I snapped one morning with Caroline laying long ways between me and Sarah. Oh, wow. It's just massive. It's a good size tent. Right, like I said, right now we're running the next step down for the short.
Which at first
time.
Felt small, but now it's like, oh no, that's enough.
Yeah,
that's enough.
California King is good. It'd be perfect for two adults and two smaller kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we recently got a king size bed at home, and so we can all four of us get in that thing. It's a king size bed is freaking huge.
It's huge. Yeah.
So, yeah. And so all three of you up there, where's the dog sleep?
Typically we'll put him in the 4Runner if we're in, you know, bear country or something like that. He's got a little bit of age on him now. And so rather than risk him running around camp, we tuck him back in his bed in the 4Runner. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dogs like to nestle in there.
Yeah.
Nobody has any trouble getting up and down the ladders? No worries with that?
No. You know, we get that question a lot. You know, I've got small kids and I really don't want to, you know, sleep up on top of my vehicle kind of thing. And, you know, if you're mindful and you train them, and, you know, the big thing is once you put them up top, zip the screen.
Yeah.
And you're going to hear it if they're trying to come back out. I mean, a kid can't unzip it very, very quietly. Quickly anyhow, or quietly.
Yeah. They can't do anything quietly.
Exactly. No, they can't.
And, you know, Caroline, she did have one spill, you know, but.
But it wasn't even from the top. Yeah. It was like midway. Right. So.
And ever since then, you know,
she's got a newfound
respect. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's just human nature. Sometimes we have to take a fall before we start realizing, you know, what we need to pay attention.
So, there's a difference between having you sleeping on top of your car and sleeping on top of your trailer. You know, like if you're the trailer's a little bit lower, it's in a different place, but also it's more of a base camp. So it seems like the rooftop tent would work really well for the base camp. You know, if you're gonna get up and leave and go somewhere else during the day, and the things on top of your truck. You know.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly. And the beauty of the trailer, the way it's designed, is there's lots of hard points that you can stand on to deploy and then close up the tent. So there's been multiple times where Sarah fully deploys the tent, and there's multiple times where she's fully closed the tent. And that's the biggest tent on the market. She did it all by herself.
Right.
I made the excuse I needed a video of it, but, you know.
I saw the video. Yeah, I was going to say, don't you have a tripod? Give her a hand.
Nope.
Gotta give it the live feel, you know.
Right.
Even a girl can do it.
Yeah. There's a little bit of weight, you know, you lever on those ladders, gotta put a little bit of weight into it, but then once it gets to that tipping point, then it's all over. It's no big deal, it seems like.
Yeah. Yep.
So talk to me a little bit about food. I know you guys aren't eating like backpacker food because I've seen the videos. Tell me about what you guys like to cook when you're camping with the trailer.
So since we have the trailer, it's and we like food, I was determined I was not going to eat hot dogs all the time and beanies and weenies and whatever else, you know. I wanted, you know, chicken or steak, or I've done stir fry. So I think a lot
carne
of it.
Asada.
Oh, and carne asada. That's our new favorite thing.
Yeah.
So I think really a lot of it has to do with just knowing what's easy and what you're good at. And I think a lot of it, like when we've gone on long trips, is meal prepping at home, so that, you know, you make sure bags aren't leaking in your cooler and getting on everything else too. But probably our standard things, like, you know, we do burgers. I'll do like grilled chicken. I've done spaghetti. We do our carne asada, which is like steak tacos. What else is something else we like? I mean, you know, like bacon and eggs. I can do pancakes. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to eat lame food. I don't want to eat hot dogs.
I like a good chili dog every now and then.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't even want, I do too, you know, yeah. But.
She doesn't like me. Chili dogs and then climbing into rooftops.
Yeah,
that's right. Really where
that is a problem. You guys had
eat clean.
Yes. Yeah.
You guys had some good looking pizza in one of your last videos.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. We just stumbled on that too because I was, you know, when I saw that question, I was thinking about it and I was like, basically, I cook anything that I don't have to cook in the oven except for pizza. And I'm like, no, wait, we have done pizza. I can do pizza.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, it's getting creative and inventive on figuring out ways to eat good. And granted, there are times where if we've rolled in late or if it's raining, I don't like to rain camp.
Mm-hmm.
That mountain house does get broken out sometimes. Yeah. But
and mountain house is good.
That's good.
I told Sarah, I was like, if you put this in a casserole dish and set it on my mom's table, I'd be like, wow, mom, this is great. You know, it's really good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of that vegetarian chili. Mountain House vegetarian chili, don't get that. That will,
okay.
At least it's hard to digest, let's say.
Well, your first problem was the vegetarian.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. I went on a backpacking trip and I don't know how I ended up with vegetarian chili, but it was me and my dad and my uncle, and it was a rough night in that tent, let me tell you.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of which, so this is the, hopefully you read the questions, you know this one's coming, but tell me about pooping in the backcountry. You guys, is there a porta potty on that thing?
There's not a porta potty with the trailer, but we do use the it's called rest stop, which is like a, what, 25 gallon bucket or whatever?
A five gallon. That's for where the chili dogs go.
Yeah, that's more than you want to carry around, man.
Right. The 5 gallon bucket. And then it has like the bags that go in it and whatnot. But,
and let me tell you, those bags,
How much information do you want to know? Because we can go there.
The people want to know.
It's a serious question. I mean, there's a major issue with people in the backcountry is honestly just taking a dump on the trail and leaving their toilet paper and just leaving it right there. So
sure.
There's
sure.
Lots of yeah. different ways to do this, and I've mm-hmm. gotten lots of different answers to this question. And this is the first time I've heard of this particular one, so I want to hear all the details.
Oh, well, really?
Most of the details.
So here's a little bit of a backstory for us. Okay. So she's always had a problem doing it in the woods. You know, it's like it just doesn't happen kind of thing.
Right.
And so
I'm better now.
So I was researching ways to help her feel more comfortable. And number one, she wanted privacy and she wanted to be comfortable. She didn't want to be hovering, you know. So we came across the Browning Privacy pop-up tent.
Mm-hmm.
And I found a lid called the Luggable Loo
right.
on Amazon. So I got that, and it pops on top of a 5 gallon bucket. And we bought us like a 10 pound bag of kitty litter. Mm-hmm. And so the first time I took her, it was actually our anniversary. We went up, just me and her. And I popped up that tent and I set the bucket inside and I just waited, you know, it was like, you know, setting a mousetrap or something. So, finally, like the next morning, she put it off as long as she could, you know?
Right.
And finally the next morning after breakfast and coffee, she's like, headed over to that tent. I'm like, okay, let's see what happens. And she goes inside and there's silence for a few minutes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You tell her.
And from the other side of the door, I hear, Kevin, you've changed camping for me.
Yeah.
Well
that
done.
That was when we were still ground tank camping. Yeah. We didn't have the trailer.
That's right. We were still ground tank camping. But nice. So yeah, having those little things like that, you know, make a big difference. And the more enjoyable you can make it for, you know, the wife and the kids and stuff, the more often that you're going to get out. And there's going to be less stress for the whole family. So,
for sure.
So yeah, check out the rest stop system. It's a bucket. They've got these bags that you do your business in.
And then you've like fold it back down and it like ziplocks up.
Right. And those are legit bags. I have forgotten those things in my trash-a-roo for like 2 weeks in the Phoenix sun. And they did not bust. So, they're legit.
That sounds like it'd be a good video. You should like be an interesting video test there.
Yeah, that's true.
How long will it last in the Phoenix? In the
okay, so chili dogs next time.
Yeah.
Or just like Caroline, get a good one.
Cool. So then, Zach, just go into the trash can when you get home.
Yep. Okay. Absolutely. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yep. Okay. So you've already mentioned, let's talk about showers next. Let's clean things up a little bit.
Okay.
So you've got an onboard shower there, even though, you had a video not too long ago about,
the shower pouch.
Yeah. So how you guys clean out, how you guys stay clean out there?
So, you know, if we have time, if we're going to be in at a campsite, we'll pop up that privacy tent that I just mentioned. Right up at the nose of the trailer, and we have a 10-foot stainless steel hose that's on the shower lead from the trailer. And with the 6-gallon water heater that it has, we can take about a 7 or 8 minute long, nice, comfortable shower. And it's amazing how rejuvenated you feel after that. You can just, you know, go for days and days and days again after that because, I don't know, something about feeling fresh and clean. But there are times where, you know, we don't have that opportunity. We'll grab a shower pouch out of the back of the 4Runner and just do a quick wipe down. So yeah, there's lots of ways to do that.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, having something to hose little kids off is great too because they love rolling in the dirt.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
yes.
It's like a magnet. Yeah.
And laying on top of the dog and.
Yeah. And there's been times where we've had to wash the dog too. You know, you get into something. Yeah. It's nice to have that to hose him down with.
Labradors are good at getting filthy.
Yes, oh, gosh. Bless his heart.
So what kind of recovery gear are you guys carrying with this? You mentioned a little bit of this. You got a winch at least.
Yeah. So we have the Spendibill X2O winch. And then we have, we carry a couple of, they're not the Max Tracks. They're the Amazon knockoffs. So. Uh-huh. No, I'm hoping Max Trax is listening right now because I could really use some free boards. But no, the ones from Amazon, they work pretty good for the price. They're just starting to fade from the sun. It won't be long before they start breaking. But we have a couple snatch blocks. We have
your pull pal.
We have the pull pal that we run with as well, especially in the desert, just because there's not a lot of recovery points to tie to. So having a land anchor. Uh-huh. To anchor to is a big help. And then, you know, a lot of miscellaneous things. We have a static tow rope, and then we also have the dynamic tow rope and the tree saver. You know, gloves are always essential, things like that. So
anything in particular relating to the trailer that you
The high lift jack is an important piece to have. We just went on this trip this past weekend with Swell Runner, and he wanted something technical, so I found him something technical.
Nice.
And of course, right when we got in the middle of it, I broke his finger. I don't know if you heard about that or not. But, so it ended up.
How'd you do that?
threw a rock at him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that'll do.
So it was one of those deals. It was super technical, and we were stacking some rocks just to try and help the process. And it was, we had this really good, actually, he just texted me. We had this real good back and forth thing. He was throwing a rock, I was throwing a rock. He was throwing a rock, I was throwing a rock. And then he threw a rock and then reached down to pick the rock back up just as I was about to throw mine. And I like stopped. Ooh. I was like, whoa. And he picked it up again and he threw it down. It was one of those sandstones. He's trying to break it and it crumbled. And so I thought, okay, he's done. And as soon as his hands went back, I threw it. And just as quick as I threw it, his hands went right back in and just smashed his middle finger. I mean, it was nasty. It was bigger than his thumb by the time it got in swelling up. So my punishment for doing that was I was the one that had to, you know, manhandle the trailers and the vehicles through the obstacle there. But so yeah, that was fun. But having a high lift jack with a trailer is important because you can actually lift the whole trailer up, 12 inches, whatever you feel safe doing, and push the whole thing over, and it'll just slam down, 8 or 10 inches to the side. And so you do that multiple times and you can clear some of those sharp S curves and stuff. So that's an important part to have for a trailer. That and also, recovery points on a trailer. I know you're building yours right now, so be thinking about how you can best strengthen the rear cross member. Right. So if somebody needs to, winch you backwards. And then maybe a couple of hard points on either side as well, just to give you a place to put a clevis or something like that if you need to recover it.
Yeah, totally. Okay, cool. So what do you guys use for communication on the trail?
We primarily use our Uniden Bearcat CB and our Yaesu FTM 400 ham radio.
Okay.
That's we prefer the ham just because of the distance, but there's still a lot of people that are getting up to speed on that. So the CB is great to have. And we actually usually carry a spare CB with us, just for newcomers and stuff. We
can, like a handheld?
Yeah, it's a handheld, but then it's also, we have the magnetic exterior antenna. Oh, okay. So Midland makes a really cool setup. It plugs into a 12-volt cigarette lighter. You slap the antenna on top and you plug in the external hookup there. And it does good. I mean, it's, it gets you half a mile to 2 miles, just depending on where you're located. Uh-huh. So like to carry that around as well. And then for emergency communications or when we're just trying to reach the outside world, we'll also use our DeLorme InReach, which now it's Garmin. Garmin bought them out. So just if we're just checking in with somebody back at home, just letting them know we're okay and where we're camping. It's nice to send that text message to the satellite and it gives them a GPS coordinate too. So if we were in trouble, they could come and find us, or if they don't hear from us the next day, they know where to start. So
cool.
It's a good little thing to have.
So use the ham radio when you can, when somebody's up on that. What's your call sign?
KG5NUH.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. I got my ham last year, the year before, but there's nobody to talk to. None of my buddies will do it.
So I ran into that too when I first started working on my license. I bought a handheld because I thought, well, this is cool because I can I can practice on it, I can lay in bed and read the manual and get it all plugged in. And so I got it. I was like, there's just nobody out there. And come to find out, as I learned more about the radios, with the handheld, you're so limited on reception and plus on output. So I ended up going to the FTM 400 and I was talking to people hundreds of miles away, and through some of the repeaters and stuff. So
cool.
Some of the conversations you hear are pretty entertaining too.
Oh yeah. Ham world is an interesting world. No doubt.
Like half hour conversations about nothing.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like, Hey, Phil, I'm doing my laundry today. Yep. Well, I'm on my way down to Taco Bell. Do you remember that one? Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
But they're good people. They're all,
they're
a community with themselves.
Yeah.
They are.
They would drop everything to come and help you if you called. So, yeah.
We've got here in Reno, we're pretty lucky. The local ham club, amateur radio club, has a repeater network. And so Reno's in a valley and there's peaks all around us, right? Uh-huh. And so there's a repeater on all those peaks. And so I can, from my house or anywhere here in Reno, I can hit any of those repeaters. Mm-hmm. This is direct line of sight. And I've talked to people, you know, way down on Southern Nevada, in Southern, from Southern Nevada, who are like driving up on a 50 watt, you know, mobile station. So, you know, and a lot of the areas around here, I can still hit those repeaters and get back to Reno, even with just a handheld. So
that's crazy. Yeah.
So it's depends on where you are, how useful that is, I think,
that's
to a certain extent.
That's true.
So what do you guys use for navigation?
So we run navigation on our Samsung S2 tablet. We'll use Google Maps for hard roads, so getting to our destination, you know, getting to our drop-off points. And then we'll run Gaia GPS app after that. We have the pro subscription, so if we have time, we'll go in to the desktop interface and actually build our routes or build ideas for routes and stuff. And that'll sync up with the tablet. And so when we get out there, we've got some options and stuff that we've kind of checked out. That's what we built the Enchanted Rockies Trail with. Mm-hmm. So that was an integral part of the planning for that as well. And then we also use AllTrails. So some, you know, when we got to Phoenix, we're, you know, unfamiliar with the area and got to looking at the AllTrails app, and there was a lot of information for the Arizona area that we were in. So we bought a subscription to that, and just for little ideas. And we do a lot of day trips now just because we've been really busy. And so that was a really cool app to play with. And then there's a lot of others. I'm kind of an app geek, so, you know, I'm always looking for the next navigation app just to play with.
Cool. Yeah, I've been using Gaia too. It's really nice. I like the sync ability. I like the I like the maps they use. They around here you can get the USGS topo maps, which have every little, you know, unnamed four-wheel drive trail on them. So cool. So we're almost done. What non-driving things do you guys like to do on your trips?
We do, or we've started now that Caroline's a little bit older, getting more into hiking. Just because, man, sitting sedentary in the car after a while gets old. So getting out and hiking and running and stretching legs is definitely high on our priority right now too. Then we also like kind of just doing like your good old basic sightseeing. Like on this trip that we just went on, what was it? Anza Borrego? Uh-huh. So we went down to Borrego Springs, and they have all this metal art everywhere. And it was really exciting to see what the artists had come up with and what they had created, you know, basically in the middle of nowhere. So getting into finding little hidden treasures like that, definitely makes, small side trips worthwhile.
And then I like get into, I like doing like, you know, nature photography, night photography, things like that. And then obviously we still continue our treasure hunts. So usually every morning, Caroline and I I'll have my cup of coffee and we'll start wandering away from camp just to see what we can find. And we've found some pretty cool stuff. There was a small little shard of Indian pottery that we found in this one place.
And, oh, cool.
We found the lid to that Model T up in Colorado, and lots of cool little things. So, and she's actually stepped up her game now. She has a metal detector. So we're waiting for that, you know, that treasure trove of gold, so that we can just, you know, start traveling full time.
The exciting world of metal detecting.
That's right.
Well, the you talk about the artifacts. My office mate here is an archaeologist, professional archaeologist, and so in the next season of this show, I'm going to be doing more like article style researched topics instead of interviews, and so I'm going to work with him to talk about artifacts and.
Cool.
What to look for and what to do when you find them, and
and
concerns about all that stuff. So,
awesome.
So hopefully that will be interesting. If you're interested in archaeology, my office mate has a whole bunch of podcasts about archaeology. The Archaeology Podcast Network is his is his whole thing. There's like 18 podcasts, but he's got one main feed that sort of has all of it in it, and he's got It's like Arc 365. It's like a little 10-minute show every day about some interesting archaeological fact.
Wow,
that's awesome.
So, so you guys might enjoy that podcast.
Yeah, awesome. Definitely.
Awesome.
All right. Well, that's it, guys. It's our conversation with Kevin and Sarah McHouston. You can follow their family adventure on YouTube on the Lifestyle Overland channel and Instagram and Facebook as well. Just search Lifestyle Overland. Check our website for all the links mentioned in this podcast of products and whatnot. Kevin and Sarah, thanks for so much for joining us this evening.
Our pleasure.
Cool. As always, friends, find the show notes for this episode at allterrainpodcast.com. You can also find a whole library of videos, trip reports, and more. Follow us on Instagram at AllTerrain Podcast and on Facebook and YouTube at AllTerrain Family. The AllTerrain Podcast is created by me, Mike Henderson, at the Reno Collective, a co-working space in Reno, Nevada. I'll be working on Season 2, which will be a series of backcountry adventure info and guides with topics like an intro to dispersed camping, how to buy a mountain bike, backcountry radio communication, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to tell your friends to subscribe as well. They'll forgive you eventually.